guys get real. You know, real guys talk real sports. We will. Race, market, game changer. Start to get real. These are the kind of guys I need to have in the locker room. The championship type guys. Certain guys, you just got to recognize, I got to pay the money. I got to keep it. Everybody has an opinion.
They came with so much bravado and so much swagger.
We're not going to make it. Sometimes you got to create space where there's no space.
I can't argue with LeBron's kids.
I do have a bit of a problem with execution. Right?
He burned a lot of bridges. He's going to be hated in Chicago. He's going to be hated in Cleveland. He's going to be hated in New York. And that's what I'm excited to see.
Now, I blame it on Nintendo. I blame it on the fact that they never played against a team that's going to be as dominant as this team could be.
The true villain team. The team that everybody wants to smack in the mouth every time they play them.
Oh, man. Killing me, man. It kills me every time I hear that. Hear Ray going in about, nah. Forget all that. Forget the generation and stuff. Forget everything y'all said, man. It's Nintendo. Ray cut to the chase on him. He said, it's Nintendo. Welcome to the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. It's your man, Marcus, the Game Changer. On Renegade Radio, RSG folks out there checking us out. 8:30 to 10:30 Tuesday nights. Welcome. You could have been anywhere, but you're with us. And we appreciate that. So we're going to keep it live for the next 2 hours. I got my man D. Wills on the line. Holler at the people.
You know, I'm just happy to have Phil T. back with us this week. It just says, you know, we're spreading real sports, guys. We're giving you another element of the game. We kind of like Wu-Tang. Now, we done brought it. I don't know if to call you a Spectre, I don't know if to call you a Method. I don't know what. We like Wu-Tang. We just keep growing. You don't know how many people in the group. They just show up. They hit you with 16 bars. So, damn, that's another one. And so I'm glad to have Phil T on the line with us tonight. I'm excited about what we got going on.
Yeah, we got Phil T, the PhD, in the house. What's up, man?
Hey, man, I'm happy to be here. I'm fired up. You know, I got my wind sprints in this week.
Yeah, buddy.
Did the three-man weave a little bit earlier. You know, got a nice lather going. I'm ready to roll, y'all, man. You know, I'm ready to roll.
All right. That's what I like to hear, man. We got the three-man booth in full effect. All right, so we got a hell of a show lined up tonight. It's a lot of ground to cover. We're going to hit y'all something we ain't hit y'all with in a minute. We're going to start the show off with the funky editorial. We're bringing it back, folks. So we're going to go ahead and get that jumping.
Fellas, one thing we need to say. Shall we say it, y'all? Melvin, Jimmy, Coleman, Ryan, say it. Everybody want to get funky one more time.
Yeah. Yeah, we're gonna cut to the chase and get right into it. Again, if you want to call in at any point during the show, feel free to call in 1-347-989-0844 and get on with the Real Sports Guys. Kick your high 16. You know, all we ask is you don't come weak. Funky editorial. So here we go, fellas. Now, for the listeners out there, I'm going to give you all a quick recap of what we're going to get into, and then we're just going to get into it. And we're going to do what we do. We editorialize. We're an editorialist, so to speak. So we give you our opinion. You know, our opinions are well-informed, but they come from a regular perspective. We have no allegiances to any organizations, any teams, you know, other than our own rooting interests. But that's just like you. We're sports fans just like you, and we're just going to give you our true, earnest perspective. And that's what the funky editorial is. So for the fans out there, Ray Lewis went on the radio this week. He did an interview with Sal Palantonio. And so, you know, Ray has been catching a lot of slack and a lot of heat. You know, Ray's a real passionate dude. And, you know, Ray's like a preacher. You know, when Ray gets to going, he gets to going, and it's service. And he held service with Sal Powell on a Sunday conversation, and Ray got into, you know, as he said, he walked the streets. And if you walk the streets like Ray walked the streets, you're going to know that if this lockout continues, as Ray put it, there's going to be a lot of evil, what we call crime. Those are Ray's words. Evil, what we call crime in the streets if the lockout continues. Now, the national media ran with it, caught a lot of flack. You know, so his comments were out of line. Now, y'all on with the real sports guys. We ain't the national media, okay? We come from a whole different perspective, a whole different view than they do. So we going to give y'all our perspective on Ray's comments in the Funky editorial. We're going to dig into his comments. We're going to look at what was he really trying to get at, and then also look at the reaction that everybody gave him and whether the reaction was just, warranted, whether it made sense, and all those kind of things. So I'm going to toss it over to COT, the PhD, and let him run with it.
Yeah, man, you know, when I heard Ray talking, I thought I was, you know, back 12 years old, man, back in church. But I think Ray is keeping it real, quite honestly. And, you know, I was listening to Van Pelt and a few other guys talking about it, and they didn't really quite grasp it. They were trying to. But for a lot of people, man, especially like in the black community, you know, cities hold their sport teams so strong, so close to the best, man. And it's something. I mean, think about what happened in New Orleans a couple of years ago when they won the Super Bowl. I was reading a study that was done. Crime went down. A lot of things went down when the Saints were playing and when they were doing well. Another thing that comes to mind is I think of The Sopranos. You know, I think we all probably love and enjoy The Sopranos. I wish it was still on. But, you know, one of the things they highlighted in there, you know, one of their biggest moneymakers was sports betting. You know, $3 billion a year goes to legal NFL sports betting. How much of that is illegal? Like, how much extra is illegal money? So if you think about it, again, I'm not condoning it. Like you said, real sports guys can keep it real. I'm not condoning it, but it's a fact. And so if you got criminals out there, man, that are running gambling rings and they don't have that business to do, well, I mean, it's not like they're going to decide, well, I'm out of work. I'm going to, you know, go back to school or something. You know, that's not really an option. You know, so from that standpoint, I kind of see where Ray's coming from.
Yeah, I'm going to toss it to D. I'm going to toss it to D. Will.
See, that's why he's a PhD. He took us deep into the hole. And I'm going to take another angle on this. And at the beginning of his comments, you know, Ray talks about the people working at the stadium. And, you know, if you ever worked at the stadium and you look at who's working there and what that income does for people, football season becomes a very important part of their lives in these cities. And these are cats who normally will be doing something else, but they're making an income working at the stadium. And so people get excited about the box seats and the corporate part of the NFL life, you know, where we have a lot of conversations about access to NFL games, how expensive they're becoming. But a lot of folks we don't pay attention to are the folks who clean up the bathrooms, the folks who are running the concessions, the folks who are doing a lot of other hustling, that the income, they depend on this income. And when you think about what some of these just the year-round use of these stadiums mean to communities in terms of jobs, that's another aspect of folks having to make decisions about what they're going to do when they're not able to work at the stadium, or when they're not able to get that extra income or that main income. And so I think, you know, he also mentioned, you know, some, and, you know, are we seeing people around the league? I mean, they're, you know, basically laying people off, giving them the pink slips. You know, folks don't know if they're going to be able to come back and work. I mean, people are kind of, so, you know, that's the other element of it. What do you do when that money you've been working at the stadium for the last 15, 20 years, we're in a recession. You're counting on that. What do you do next? In an environment where there's not a lot of jobs, if you don't have the education to move away or have access to other revenue streams, what do you do? So I think when you unpack it, I think part of when you get the main media, you know, mainstream media out there, people get hyped. First of all, you have folks who are in the media who come from environments in which they're not talking about the streets that Ray's talking about. So, again, it's hard for them to dig deep and kind of understand because a number of the folks who are coming, you know, people come from are affluent. I mean, most of the people at ESPN, that's not the most diverse, even though you see some on-air personalities, that's not the most diverse environment you're going to see. There aren't always a lot of people who are coming from these circumstances, you know, so they're not, you know, it's not like, you know, it's not like you got to go deep. Now, did Ray lay it out the way he should have? You know, he probably could have gone deeper with it, but, you know, when you look at his interview, it's basically, you know, like, five minutes, something like that, and he also talked about the Ravens during that time. So he didn't spend that much time on the topic, and but if you unpack it, you think about who's working at these stadiums. What are they going to do when they're not working at the stadiums in an environment where there's not a lot of jobs? I mean, I think that's what people have to think about and get a little deeper than just kind of this surface level reaction that folks are having. Is crime going to go up? You don't know. But if I become an income, I'm going to try and find another way to hustle.
Yeah, and I agree with both of you guys, and I think both of you guys are really digging into this particular statement or the particular statements made by Ray. I think, you know, I heard the Van Pelt comments. You know, I heard some other cats kind of weigh in on it, and I think you're right on, D, when you're saying they're missing a point. It's not that, you know, they trivialize it, saying that, so there's no NFL football for 10 weekends in the city. These cats are going to start knocking off banks, you know. Oh, I can't, you know, sell hot dogs at the game, so I'm gonna flip cars. You know what I'm saying? And those are the kind of comments what they were making, being kind of funny about it. And it's like, no, I'm not gonna flip cars, but I might sell a little weed on the side. You know what I'm saying? Which I may or may not get caught for. You know what I'm saying? They think in crime like, you know, like it's the town. You know, the movie The Town. You know, they thinking cats is going to start, you know, coming in with Richard Nixon mask going into First National or something like that. And that's not the kind of crime I think that Ray is getting at. Ray is getting at more petty, small kind of crime. Hustles, you know. You know, most hustles are hustles because they're not legal.
Right.
That's why it's a hustle, you know. And those are the kind of things I think Ray was trying to enlighten people to, is that a lot of people depend on that income in a lot of different ways. And, you know, people talk about the stadium, not just the stadium, the sports bars, the establishments around the stadium. You know what I mean? All those establishments, the service who serve people at those establishments, those are big game days, are big days all day from pregame to postgame. Those establishments make a ton of money. It's the same type of effect that LeBron had when he left Cleveland. And they were talking about that, how hard Cleveland was going to be hit economically when all of that money moved away. You know, the hotels. It's a whole economic system that goes with an NFL Sunday that is going to fall apart that isn't necessarily tied to the actual game or what goes on even within the stadium, that I think people are forgetting. You know, they're getting caught up in Ray's comments and taking it at a surface level instead of really digging into what he's trying to say. You know, they're taking it they're taking a very superficial view at what he's talking about instead of really thinking about, well, what is it he's trying to say? You know, they're thinking he's saying that people are, it's going to be like dead presidents, you know, cats popping out of garbage cans, you know, running around. And not, they're taking it to the extreme.
That's right.
You know, they're taking it to the extreme one way, and that's not necessarily what they're talking, what he's talking about. And this is a conversation I've had with people recently. Over the last couple of years, I've had this conversation several times talking with people. I'm a social worker by trade. And talking with people, you know, you have families who are struggling in communities but yet they're not going to give up their season tickets to the UW.
Yeah.
You know? But they're cutting back on other things, but they're keeping those season tickets. And I explain it. People are like, well, how can you prioritize season tickets over, you know, food? And I'm like, nobody's prioritizing season tickets over food. You know, they may not take a family trip or something like that. But what I think people forget is that sports are a huge stress relief for people. And when times are hard, people need those stress reliefs. They need those releases. Because if they don't have those releases, yeah, mental health is a very fragile thing. You know what I'm saying? And when people don't have an outlet, you know, I'm a ball player, and I play basketball, you know, and if I go too long without playing ball, I get a little different. I get a little cranky. I get a little crabby. And I think it allows me a space to release some energy, some pent-up energy, some pent-up emotions. It allows me to be a different kind of way that I don't get to be at work, that I don't get to be with my children or with my spouse. And that's what football and the NFL allows for a lot of people in this population. I mean, you know, like, I can go and watch it. I can appreciate the NBA, you know, and I can appreciate the NFL, but, you know, the NBA is a city sport. The NBA is very urban. It's very black. You rarely going to find a black person who don't dig the NBA and don't follow the NBA. You will find a lot of white people that don't follow the NBA, but you rarely find a white person that don't follow the NFL. And so you have a large population of people who use sports and use the NFL as a way to, as Ray was saying, they live through them. And they use that as a release on Sundays. You know, I know cats that if the Packers lose on Sunday or Monday, that next day, for those first couple of hours of the day, they're going to be a little sour. They're going to be a little sour. And you definitely don't want to talk to them right after the game. My stepfather's that way. The Packers lose, leave them alone for about an hour, hour and a half. Let them chill out. Let them get all his cusses out. And then you can go rap with him. But leave him alone for a minute. The Packers lost. The Packers win? Oh, he good. He good. He about to go mow the lawn for another hour, spend an hour outside mowing the lawn or whatever. You know, he gonna get on with the rest of the day. But let him lose, it bothers him a bit. And, you know,
dog out. Let the
right.
Dog gonna get kicked.
Right. And so I think that's what the national media is missing on this, on these comments, is that no, he's not saying, and no, nobody's gonna go beating their wife or beating their kids or anything like that. But stress builds, man. Stress builds and pressure bust pipes. You know what I'm saying? And you never know how a person is going to react when that life pressure of living in a tough economy, and you don't have those small little joys, those little things that you enjoy, those little things that allow you to kind of keep going from week to week. When those things go away, whether it's the NFL or something else that somebody does, when those things get taken away, when they go away, people get angry, people get frustrated, people get stressed, and they don't have a release valve. And so I think that's part of what Ray was getting at and part of what people were missing. Now, another angle I want us to get into in discussing this issue, and I want to throw this one to D first. You know, and Stuart Scott came on Van Pelt's show, and he made these comments, and I want to see how you guys feel about his comments. He was saying how we always want our athletes to have something to say. We always want them to have an opinion. You know, and Stu made a point to say that this is just Ray's opinion. You know, it's not fact, it's not law, it's not a prophecy. He ain't predicting a rapture or nothing like that. You know what I'm saying? He's just saying that this is what he thinks. But yet we jump on him. We jump down his throat, and we do this to athletes. We want them to be interesting. We want them to be compelling. We want them to have something to say. But at the same time, when they don't give us canned answers, we jump down their throats, and we call them morons. We call them idiots. We call them all, you know, we call them off base for having opinions. How do you feel about that take on it? You know, do we do that? Should we do that? I mean, how much accountability do we have to hold Ray Lewis to for his statement or his comments if we disagree? You know, if it were something that he said that we disagree with.
I agree with Stuart. I think that, we try to have it both ways. And you're not going to someone like Ray Lewis. Ray is deeper than that. Ray is not going to give you a canned answer. And Pal knew that. Or Sal. Sal knew that. When he made the interview. I mean, Ray's gonna take you deep. Ray is spiritual. That's who he is, and that's what, I think why people love the way he plays. So, I think that's one of my things. I think that we're missing. That's what we're missing from athletes who really care about being part of a larger community, and trying to care about that. When they make a mistake, we make those kind of mistakes all the time in private times, or I might be on the phone and say what Ray said, but I don't have, a million people listening or people on Twitter repeating what I just said. So we make Scott Van Pelt probably makes those kind of mistakes all the time in private, or he has the mic long enough to switch directions and come back and says, well, I really mean this, in a way that someone who is sitting down with somebody for basically what looks like, we're covering like a 4-minute clip, doesn't get. And so, we want our athletes to be engaged. We criticize Michael Jordan because he said Republicans buy shoes too. We criticize all these athletes because they're not doing what Jim Brown did in the 60s or Lew Alcindor before he was Kareem, in which, Bill Russell and these folks who cared about things larger than sports. And so we have a person here who obviously cares about things larger than sport. He's very passionate about sport, but he's more passionate about community and people. And then we jump on him rather than allowing him to have a space to have a voice. So I agree with you. I think that, and this is why you're going to see more athletes clam up. You're not going to do that. And that's a ripple effect, So these are people who have the ability to leverage themselves, their personalities for social change, and they see something like this for Ray Lewis. And most cats is insecure when it comes to this kind of stuff. But Ray is secure. We think 90% of those other athletes who could take more social stance, who could take more investment, are going to do it. They're not putting themselves out here after they see what Ray. If they're going to do that to Ray, what do you think they're going to do to me? And so, we try to have it both ways, and that's why you got, underground radio like us. We find a place to say, hey, Ray, keep talking. If they're not going to let you come on our show, we'll let you say whatever you want to say. That's how we feel. We want you to have that space. And so, I think that, people got to keep pushing the envelope on this stuff because, we need Ray to keep talking. Because 9 times out of 10, he's going to say something that isn't going to be this controversial. Is going to be right on point, and we're going to miss those other 9 things. And I don't want to miss those other 9 things. I want him to continue talking. Because the one thing that he said is evil behavior. So that's spiritual. We're missing that.
Yeah.
I want to say this real quick. He said evil. So that's not even less but crime. You're talking about other things. I got a good friend who's a bar owner. He's a top bar in the community. And one of the things he says is that, bars, sales go up with recessions. So it ain't about even profiting from crime. It's about participating in things that lead to other types of behavior that people do when they have idle time. And so those are the other things he's talking about. Not saying that drinking doesn't have around sports, but when you talk about the people who are employed, impacted by sports, when they're not being able to benefit from that economy of sport, and you don't have another income in, where you spend your time when you're not getting up going to work.
Right.
So,
even if on Sundays, your pressure releases to sit down and watch a game, now
right.
you sitting at the bar.
Yeah, you sit at the bar.
Drinking instead of watching a game to relieve your stress.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh.
Or you picking up a blunt or something
right.
else. You know what I'm saying? You're doing something else to relieve your stress.
Right. So that's the evil part. When you unpack it, he's talking about more now. He's talking about people participating in things they normally would participate if they were to just sit down and hang with family and watch the game. You know, and I mean, you could draw from whatever you want to talk from that, But people haven't taken the time to look at what's the possibility of that. I mean, this is great. We got the doctoral candidate on the line. This is a good research topic.
Let me ask you guys a question, because this is what I immediately thought of. And humor me for a minute, because I'm sure your initial response would be, well, this person will never say this. But what if Peyton Manning said the same thing? The same exact thing. What do you guys think the response would have been?
Peyton's got a point.
Right. I think people wouldn't have dismissed it as quickly, and I think the national media would have did what we did. Because I think we come from the same place, we come from the same perspective that Ray does. So when Ray said it, we knew where he was going with it, and we dug into it, and we said, okay, let me think about this a little bit deeper. Honestly, if Peyton said it, I probably would have been like, what is Peyton talking about? You know what I'm saying? Because just understanding where he's coming from and his perspective, I think if Peyton Manning had said it, this is a great question, if Peyton Manning had said it, the national media would have immediately been like, let's dig into this. Let's see where this is going. I think he has a point. Let's see where this goes. Let's see what he's actually getting at.
And I think they would have linked it to New Orleans. I think they would have found a way to link it to the Saints. And, like, Peyton grew up in New Orleans and saw the impact of sports in New Orleans and what it did for resurrecting that community. They would have done that. They would have made the immediate connection to his upbringing and what his family has done in New Orleans in a way that sports helped with the recovery of New Orleans. That's what they would have done. That would have been the storyline. And so, and in a way that they didn't do for Ray and what sports has done in Miami. So that's where I think they would have gone with the storyline. They would have linked it back to where, you know, Louisiana, where he grew up, and the whole story with Drew Brees and sports, and they probably would have done an entire series on, again, on New Orleans, go to the Super Bowl, and, you know, they would have done it.
That's what I'm talking about. Keep it real. Keep it real.
I'm already seeing the clips as I'm saying it. They would have sat around on 60 Minutes with all the Mannings, and they would have gone deep with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel you. No doubt. Yeah, that's the truth right there. As you see that, you only get that here, man. You only get that on the Real Sports Guys, man. Renegade Radio, Underground. That's how we keep it really real. We keep it all the way real. We keep it 100, as the youngins say. You know, that's how we do it. That's how we do it. Any other takes before we wrap up the funky editorial?
Just say, Ray, hey, if y'all get this to Ray, tell Ray. Ray can come to our show anytime and say what he wants to say. We're going to go deep. We might try and get Ray on.
As he eventually, and listeners out there, if you are a true blue RSG Renegade Radio fan, understand that's where we're going. We're going to be that place where athletes can come on and say whatever the hell they want. That's what we're working towards. We want to be able to get a Ray Lewis on. We want to be able to get, you know, some of these more. We want to be able to get a Ron Artest on here and just have him say what he want to say. Just have him shout out. I say Queen Bridge 30 times.
5 minutes.
You know what I'm saying? That's where this is going. That's where we're headed, all right? So hang on for the ride because we're going to get there. But this is what this is going to become, all right? And you can say you got in on ground level. All right. So, you know, we're kicking a new format. We got another segment that we're going to get into. And we call it Five on the Black Hand Side. All right? So Five on the Black Hand Side. We got five questions and statements about a couple topics, and we each going to just kind of weigh in on them. You know, we're going to go through each one, and, you know, we'll each of us will kind of give our own take on it. All right? So we're going to get into that real quick.
Five on the Black Hand Side.
Yes, sir. Yeah, so
bring it.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? It's game changing. We're changing the game today. All right, so we got the Bulls Heat. So the topic this week is the NBA playoff series. So I got five questions for each of the playoff series for the Bulls and Heat. First question. Let's get into it. What are the Heat doing to make it so damn hard for the Bulls to get to the basket? I mean, like, I've been watching these games, and I'd be like pulling out my beard hair. Because the Bulls just, they look like they're trying so hard to get off a good shot, and they just cannot. I mean, but it looks like they're trying so damn hard, but they cannot get off a good look to save their lives right now. So what is it that the Heat is doing?
Well, I want to say this. Can I say one thing quickly? Is that the universe is all right. It's realigned. Haslam has realigned the universe in Heatland. And the reason why I say that is that before it was out of alignment, you had guys without Haslam in the lineup, in the rotation. Guys are playing slightly out of position, playing slightly more minutes than they were supposed to. Had to do one or two things more than they needed to do. Having Haslam come back into the rotation has allowed people to kind of, like the Joel Anthony's of the world, to do the one thing they need to do. Maybe to do the one thing he needs. Everybody's kind of back in their natural position of rotation. So you look at the Heat, they look much more comfortable, particularly defensively. They're looking good, even better than they were looking before offensively. A little bit more fluid. I mean, it just looks like everybody's in their rightful place, playing the right kind of minutes, and you got to give them that. The other thing with the Bulls is that the Bulls are not being aggressive. So when you watch the screen roll, and they love running that screen roll. When you watch the screen roll, they don't have somebody who's screening when they catch the ball. They don't look to shoot, so they're not being aggressive, not attacking. They put no pressure on the defense. Which is bad because then they start rotating the ball again, and then Rose is catching it with time running down. So, you know, you see folks like Noah catching it in space, or even Carlos Boozer can hit it from the free throw line and elbow. He'll catch it and hesitate, or he'll put it on the floor and charge rather than just catch it in motion, take what they give you, and go with it. The other thing you find is that two-car position is a liability. On defense, it's a good thing. On offense, they got nobody. They don't have anybody who could take over at the point and let Rose play off the ball. I don't see anyone who can allow him to do that, which is problematic. If you can allow him to play off the ball a little bit and run some weak side, then he could attack a little different. So those are the kind of things that I see that the Bulls have. I see some lineup changes tonight that they did a little bit, but they need to Cassidy to be a little bit more aggressive, and then they got to clean up on the offensive glass. They get up on the rim, get to the rim, and clean up a little bit. But people got to take what the defense gives them. If they give you the open 10-footer, you got to take it. Don't hesitate. You got to take it, and they're not taking that shot. Or you got to screen with somebody like someone who is a shooter. You got to screen the roll with them to make them pay when they double on rolls. You know, things you're just not seeing those adjustments from Chicago.
Bill, PhD, what you got?
He nailed it. I'll take my shot at the next one. He nailed it.
All right, we're going to roll the next two. Hey.
I'm sorry.
See, what that was, he blacked out right there, okay? You know, in hip-hop, that's the term for you non-hip-hop literate folks out there. When MC blacks out, that's when he just goes so hard on the verse that you really don't want to touch the mic for about, you know, 45-60 minutes. Just want to let it simmer. Just want to let it simmer for a little bit. You know, and that's what
right.
D just did. So PhD Phil T said, I ain't gonna touch that one. He's like, I'm gonna let that mic simmer for a minute. Let's go on to the next one. You don't want to go after Cat after you black out. You don't want to go after Cat after you black out. All right. So number two on our five on the black hand side for the Bulls versus Heat series, we got. The Bulls have no match. They have no matchup for Chris Bosh right now. Bosh Spice. They got no matchup for Bosh Spice.
Oh,
What you making that statement right there, Phil T? Agree, disagree?
I disagree. I think the Bulls do have a matchup for Bosch. But, so I think Noah can match up with Bosch. And I think if Noah's on Bosch for 30, 35 minutes, you know, Bosch will barely get double figures, in my opinion. But I think that is playing to the Heat's strength, because pulling Noah away from the basket, that takes him off the defensive board, and that takes away from the Bulls' ability to get the fast break going. So, you know, initially, a week or two ago, I said my biggest key matchup was Bosch and Boozer. I felt whoever won the matchup between Bosch and Boozer would win the series. And so far, Bosch has simply dominated Boozer. Now, Boozer, the first couple of games, he wasn't on the court as much. But again, looking at that matchup, just like in the previous series with Garnett and Bosch, I felt in that series as well, whoever won that matchup, their team would have the greatest probability of winning the series. So at this point, I think the Bulls do have a matchup. They can use Noah, but again, if Noah has to spend so much energy on trying to contain Bosch, I mean, that just opens up the middle a lot more for LeBron and D-Wade to penetrate and kick it out. Now, in Game 3, we saw Mike Bibby hit a lot of big shots. And I think it was Larry a couple of weeks ago mentioned that, guess what, James Jones, he's normally due for a big game, one big game in the series. And I agree with
that. One game.
That's right, one game. And he hasn't had it yet, and it's Game 4. So, again, if Noah has to follow Bosch out, and like you all just mentioned, Bosch, you know, he stays with that elbow for the most part. I mean, he's a big guy, but, you know, he's more on the elbow than the block most of the time. So if he can pull Noah away, man, that's just going to part the Red Seas, man, for the Heat.
And D, you might want to let that one simmer too.
Yeah, he put that one down. I wasn't going to add one on to it. I think the other thing they need to do with him, because I didn't want to touch this one, I was going to let it simmer. But one thing I think you also did, they're being too soft with him. They need to get physical with him and bang him too much. He's too comfortable. So even if you don't put Noah on him, the problem is letting him roam with too much comfort. And I'm not sure if you start banging him, you're not going to rattle him. But he still hasn't proven that level of toughness. And it seems like Chicago came in with that physical attitude, and they're not really playing physical. They're letting Miami be too free with their offense, particularly.
And the foul trouble.
Yeah.
Foul trouble. I mean, last game, Noah had got two fouls early. Ty, he got two fouls earlier. Biggs has been picking up fouls because D-Wade and that first game, D-Wade and LeBron wasn't attacking. And when they're not attacking, that protects Chicago's bigs, and that allows their bigs to get after it. And if their bigs can rough up Bosch and can get after it, it's a different kind of ball game. But when their bigs are on the bench and they're sitting and they're not playing aggressive when they are in, and they're not giving that extra effort because they don't want to get a foul, then, you know, I think that evens the playing field a little bit. And if the playing field is even, Miami's got more talent.
I think that's where you got to bring a Tim Thomas type. Definitely need an old vet. You only got to give you 5 minutes of funk. That's what you got to get, an old cat like that, if you can get it. Somebody like that that's just going to give you 5 minutes of just showing the young cats how it's supposed to be done, and he just walked back to the bench.
And see, man, I just picked you Kirk Thomas getting stuck at half court. I picked Kirk Thomas getting stuck at half court, where it's like he gets to half court and then LeBron will just run right by him. And then he starts to turn around and D-Rose just fly right by him. And then he starts to come back and then he just goes. This brother's stuck at half court, can't get going either way because the game is too fast for him. So, let's see, we're going to move on to question three. The Heat's big 2.5. We call him 2.75 since Bosch been showing up. Big 2.75 been showing up. They've been playing some major minutes in the series so far. The last couple of games, and I think you hit on it earlier, D, when you were talking about how the universe is shifting a bit with Haslam coming back. What has happened, though, with Haslam coming back is that Spoelstra's shortened up his rotation. He's playing by eight people. He bringing Haslam, Miller, and Chalmers off the bench, and pretty much leaving it at that. We haven't seen Big Z. We haven't seen Damp. We haven't seen James Jones in a couple of games. So he's shortening up his rotation. He's playing LeBron and D-Wade and Bosh a lot of minutes. Now, what I noticed is that the last game, the Sunday game, they all played almost 40 minutes. All three of them played about 40 minutes. Now, I figured he was like, we need to win game three. We need to win this game. I'm going with an eight-man rotation. We got, I don't know how many days they had off, and I think he figured after that rest, they can go ahead and play a bunch of minutes. And so he played them as much as he could without wearing them down. But is the fact that they're going to have to play a whole lot of minutes, is that eventually going to wear on them?
I don't think so. You know, I think the benefit of having three young superstars out there that are, you know, putting in the most energy on the offensive end is that they're young. And, you know, LeBron, he mentioned earlier in the season that he felt that he and D-Wade were playing too many minutes. This past week, you know, I heard him mention, hey, I can play 48 minutes. I can be cool with it. You know, in fact, I think in either game two or three, he played 46. So, you know, I mean, at this point, I mean, these guys, I mean, nobody's at 100% at this point in the playoffs. But having a day off between every game, not having any back-to-backs, you know, gosh, you know, the first two games, well, there was 4 days in between game two and three. So I don't think it's going to affect them much. You know, I think their energy level is going to stay high. And honestly, I think Spoelstra might even lean on that, especially in the game three and four, because they're at home. And they get some additional energy from their home fans. So I don't think it's going to affect them too much.
How you feel about that statement, D?
Yeah, I think so. I think the way the way timeouts go, way these games are played, TV timeouts, all these different, the kind of the pace that the game is played, the rest in between, these guys, they know that they're close to the end of the season. They have the summer to rest. He's going to milk it. The other thing is that because you have Haslam and some of these guys back, I also don't see them having to expend the same amount of energy that they did probably about a month ago to play. That both Wade and LeBron look very comfortable on the court. They look very comfortable shooting. They look very comfortable getting shots. They're playing, but they're not exerting the same kind of energy I saw them having to exert even in the Boston series or even, you know, about a month ago when they were playing. I mean, I just think that because the rotation looks like it's more fluid, it looks like everybody's comfortable with the game plan, that these guys are really figuring out where they're going to get their spot. You watch the rotations in terms of when they send people to bench and how they're spotting Wade or playing LeBron. You know, he had LeBron on there with four subs. It looked like Cleveland. He just played like he was in Cleveland. You know, you can see him beginning to pick it up a little bit. But the four on the court look better than the people he probably had at Cleveland. He just in terms of the continuity. So, you know, I just think that Spoelstra's in this. They're in this. They look like they're in the zone. They're finally starting to click a little bit in a way that I didn't see last week when we were talking about them. I just, you know, Colin Cowherd talked about when you have new information, sometimes you're able to make adjustments. We listen. We're fans of the game. We listen to other folks. That's important. But you know, you get new information. You start to see it. I sat there and watched it. So I think they can play as many minutes because I just think they look more comfortable and they're really managing their energy well.
Yeah, I'm a transition that into number four. And here's a question: is Boozer being exposed? And can he be that guy to help Chicago get to that next level? Is he going to be able to help D. Rose get to that next level? You know, everyone's got to have a 1A or a good 2. Can Boozer be that?
Yeah, I think Boozer's, his performance so far in the playoffs and really towards the last half of the season has been disappointing. You know, you get a guy who's coming in, and I think he pretty much got max money or pretty close to it. You know, he was one of the big dogs in the free agent class this past summer, and now you're struggling to find a place where to put this guy on the court. You know, you got Kyle Korver, who's a – oh, my goodness, that guy is a defensive liability. I mean, you could put defensive liability in the dictionary and put a picture of this guy running around screens. I mean, they were just going at him the other day. You know, you got him out on the court, then you put Boozer out on the court. All of
side note, though, side note on the Korver. Did you see what Bron trucked him? I just laughed. I saw Kyle Korver backpedaling and LeBron coming at him. I'm like, this is not going to end well. That's all I got to say. You can keep going.
Yeah, I agree. But, I mean, Boozer's really been disappointing. You know, I saw him play his first couple of years in Cleveland. I actually had a season ticket. You know, he was there the year before LeBron, and then, you know, he played a year or two with LeBron. And defensively, this guy was solid. You know, he'd get you 10, 11 rebounds. At that point, he was scoring around 10, 12 points a game. He was really solid. He moved his feet well. I mean, he went to Duke. And, you know, I don't know if it's the knee surgery that screwed him up or what, but, I mean, this guy is just a liability at this point. I mean, he's just getting abused. You know, Joel Anthony. So, I mean, right now, Tibbs is sitting this guy in crunch time in the fourth quarter when he has the luxury to do so. So, you know, I mean, look at it. Boozer scored, what, 20-something, 25 in game three?
46-17.
Yeah, and Bosch had a better game. So, I mean, what's the point of putting them points in if the guy you cart, you know, you're guarding is doing you one better?
Yeah, when I looked at that 26 and 17 that Boozer had in that game, he probably should have had about 35 and 24. I mean, that's what he leaves you wanting. Like, he had a lot of easy buckets that he blew. He had a lot of buckets around the basket that he's blowing, and it's like, come on, you know, not even the defensive part of it. You know, I think the point you hit on about him having to be subbed because of his lack of defense on a defensive team, I think that's a great point, because that does take him out of the game, and that cuts his minutes, and that cuts his effectiveness. You know, he's one of those guys where it's like, okay, how much you putting on the plate, how much you taking off the plate. You know, and you need to put it on a scale. Okay, so how much you putting on, and what you giving up. You know, and that's what Boozer is. And I don't know if he can get them over the top. I don't know if he can be the guy they need him to be on the block, as far as, you know, being able to get some low post buckets when they need them, and then just being locked in and being tougher on defense.
You just hit the point that I wanted to jump in on, because it's not what Boozer does, it's how he does it. I've always felt about it. I don't know if this is just a Duke fan. I hate to hit y'all Duke fans. But...
Now, if it's off a Duke fan, it's all good.
But it's not what he does, it's how he does it. It's, I don't know if he cares about being great. His dog meter, you know, I'm going to go to a dog meter, is low. I don't know how, see, when you're that talented and you don't, he should be killing Bosch. But part of it is, I don't know if he cares about being great, meaning I don't know if he cares about his legacy. Some people can't play, like, you know, Kobe plays about thinking about the legacy, and the legacy is winning. They play with the legacy in front of them all the time. I think D-Wade plays like that. I think KG plays like that. I don't think Boozer really cares about his legacy. I don't think he envisioned where his jersey's going to be hanging in the rafters. Young D-Rose plays like he cares about his legacy in Chicago. Boozer doesn't play like that. Therefore, it's not what he does. Because when you care about their legacy, people care about it. Sometimes they score 15 points and 10 rebounds. You're like, damn, they feel like they scored 30 because of the way they play. They just play hard. Like KG, you don't know what he ends up with, but when you look at him, you're like, damn, you know he played hard. And even if it's a bad game, it wasn't because he didn't play hard. And that's, you'll get that from Boozer, who has way more talent. You know what I'm saying? Can play left and right hand around on the basket, can step out to 15 feet, can go off the dribble a little bit, one dribble, get to the rim. He's a decent free throw shooter. He's a physical specimen, but you're not getting that production. So the only thing that's missing, the variable that's missing, does he really care that much? And that's the part, I don't think he cares about being great. I think he just cares about getting paid for being
a mercenary. It's that mercenary mentality.
That's right.
F you, pay me.
Look how, when you look at how he's posting, he's not even posting like he cares.
Yeah.
Boring him. You know what I'm saying? He should be boring him and he's coming straight. Look, he's dribbling like, he should be boring him. And one time he should just go to the rim like, I'm just going to dunk on you because I can. You're going to foul me or you're going to get
the. You're either
going to
foul me or you're going to want to fight me when I'm done with this.
That's it. He don't play like he's fighting. KG play like he fight. Like, you think, damn, KG's hand-to-hand combat down there. He damn near going to kill you. Boozer don't play like that, man. And if I look at him, I'm thinking we overpaid.
You go back about 5 years, man, you remember what he did to Mr. Gunn, the blind owner for the Cavs. I mean, he messed around and duped him and went to Utah, man.
Mercenary.
You've been having bad karma since then.
Mercenary mentality.
Under the
puck of a bucket. Who's the type of cat? He's like, don't worry about me, just get the money.
Run it out of there.
I'm with you, though, D. I'm with you. I mean, Boozer, you know, if I had to list 10 players I just love to watch play, Boozer would be on that list. You know, I mean, like Clark Kellogg says, deep down inside, you know, we all like to see the big man dominate. And I like to see Boozer because he's got such good footwork. You know, I mean, he's got a very polished game that you don't see a lot from post guys nowadays. You know, yeah, I mean, KG's the same way, but it's just so disappointing when I don't see him apply that. You know, just like what you were saying, D, I mean, it's like he's underachieving. You know, how can you be a beast during the season, during your career, and all of a sudden when the big lights are shining, you know, you come in with 9 points and 6 rebounds in 22 minutes. What is that all about?
Yeah, blowing help rotation.
He don't even get upset about it. He's going through the motions. He looks busy, but he's not effective. He's not productive.
See, Boozer is that dude, when you go to the court and you run a pickup, he's the cat that gets picked first. And you like, yo, dude's got to be a beast. He's got to be a beast. And then when you get on the court, every time you make a mistake, he's kind of looking at you like you messed up. Like it wasn't his fault. Like if you watch him, he'll do that sometimes. Like he'll mess up and then he'll look at the other guy like, yo, you're supposed to have my back on that or oh man, something wrong with the ball was slipped off my hands. Look, he's probably doing it right now. My hands were slippery. I don't know what happened. You know what I mean? Like, oh man, my sleeve got caught. That's what he looks like to me sometimes. He looks like that dude that's constantly making excuses for himself.
That's right.
You know, instead of just going out there and doing what he's supposed to do, he constantly looks
like, I wish I could trip you. Kurt looking like, I wish I could trip you.
Seriously.
He's your own teammate. He can't look like disgust.
Seriously, and that's how eventually people start feeling about that guy at the court who looked like he could ball, and you expected him to do stuff, and he get on the court talking like he's finna do a whole lot. And then, you know, he airball. Oh, man, the wind took that one. That was the wind. The wind took that one. You know, he threw a bad pass. I thought you was going to cut a little bit to the left. You know, he posting up, dribble off his foot. Man, that ball, something wrong with that ball, man. And that ball ain't got air in it. You know, he's that dude who's constantly making those kind of excuses for himself.
And when he goes, if you piss and he goes to the sideline, he fired the guy who got next, like, you know, yeah, I'm ready to go next. And he gets on the court again.
Right, and he gets on the next team because he looks like he can hoop. And you sitting over there like, man, don't pick him up, man.
There's no way Todd Gibson should be stealing minutes from Carlos Boozer. There's just no way Todd Gibson should be stealing minutes. And the
right.
Big guy from Turkey, again, there's no way that these guys should be stealing minutes from Carlos Boozer. I mean, that's good. That just shouldn't happen, ever.
Yeah. Yeah, it just should. It really should. It really should. It really should. So, yeah, I think we got a consensus on how we all feel about Boozer. So I'm going to move on to the next one. Yeah, who's doing a better job of coaching right now, Tibbs or Spo?
I would say that Spoelstra's doing an excellent job, and he's growing into his own. I think Spoelstra's got more to work with, if you look at it. But I think he's found his rotation. You know, a coaching is getting people to buy into your philosophy. He's gotten these guys to buy into the defense, the game plan, the executing. He's got them thinking defense first because we can always score. He's got them in a nice rotation. You know, Miami just looks comfortable. I don't know. I think Tibbs is at a point where you only got so many bullets in the gun. So it's a hard question because initially when I looked at this question, I'm like, I'm going to say Spoelstra. But then I look at Tibbs and I'm thinking, if I'm in his position, what do I have to work with? Like, what adjustments has he made? What other adjustments could he make?
See, Tibbs is freaking in Marley Marl style.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I got an 8-track recorder. I got an 8-track recorder MPC. Spo's got the full, he's got the Timberland hookup. You know what I'm saying? He's got the whole digital hookup. He's got you know, the Macs, the computers, the keyboards, he's got the drum machine, you know, he's got live instruments in there. He's got the whole hookup. You know, and Tibbs has got the Marley Marl set up. He's trying to make the symphony.
He's like, we just going straight lyrical and hope it works. I mean, he got too many more adjustments to make because what he needs is what we just talked about. He needs some of his key guys to want to win. And all coaches can do is put you in a certain thing, and then you got to be ready for the moment. And whereas Spoelstra's been able to make some adjustments and everything else, you know, what he's basically done and said, my two stars against your one, we're going to cancel you out anyway. So then everybody else got to produce. And he's basically, the only thing I can think about is Tibbs' bench is not producing. And I don't, you know, you don't know why that's not happening. Because in the first game, they
road games. Road games.
So we're talking about road games. So, you know, he's a two guard. He's a Nate Robinson type of guy away from what he needs. He needs another point. He needs somebody who can bring the ball up.
Or just another penetrator. Not even a point. Just another guy who can get into the teeth of the defense and finish.
That's right.
Put some pressure on the defense.
That's right.
You know, just one more guy who can attack the basket that way.
Allow Rose to play off the ball some. I mean, that's what he's missing. So I'm saying when your question is, I would say Spoelstra just because the results are there, but I'm not sure that Tibbs hasn't done everything he can do with the team he has without people like Boozer them deciding that I ain't going to pump Kool-Aid no more. That's the only thing. He's got hair on his chest. Afro is something, you know, that he can't pump nothing in him.
Yeah.
You know? So that's the only thing he's missing right now, and he, you know, that's all I can say.
He said, "Boozer need a blood transfusion. Ice water for Kool-Aid." Oh man, Phil T, who you got, Spo or Tibbs?
That's a tough one. You know, I mean, both these coaches are coming from different places. You got Tibbs, and, you know, he's walking in the kitchen. He got to make dinner. He got to make dinner for his family. You know, he having company over. And he's looking in the cupboard, and it's like, man, you know, I got peanut butter. I got jelly. I got some trimmings, but I really don't have a lot of options. And then you got Spoelstra, and Spoelstra's just sitting there trying to figure out not to get in the way, not to mess it up. You know, and Spoelstra's got like a Chef Ramsay's type of kitchen. And he's got everything he wants. You know, if you got a walk-in cooler, you know, and, I mean, in comparison to Chicago, I mean, we know that the Heat still has some holes. But especially with Haslam playing well, like you guys mentioned earlier, he's got a lot more to work with. So with that being said, you know, I would go with the Heat's coach. But at the same time, I think I'm a little disappointed that the Bulls have not found a better opportunity to isolate Derrick Rose more. Now, this game four that we're watching right now, Rose has been a lot more aggressive, but still, I mean, last I checked, he was 5-for-17 from the field. You know, so I would like to see them try to isolate him more, try to find better opportunities, you know, to move him off the ball, you know, to kind of free him up. He's so fast. He's so quick. He's a smart ball player. If you get him off some screens, he can find some opportunities. And so, unfortunately, I would like to see him do more of that, but they just haven't got that done so far. So, for that reason, I would go with the Heat's coach.
And I feel you, Phil, because that's where I think I give the edge to Tibbs, and it's not a knock on Spo. I think Spo's doing a great job. I think he's doing a great job with what he's got. He's working what he's got, and he's maximizing what he's got. I think I would say Tibbs is doing a better job simply because their identity is defense, and because of that, he has to play guys who don't play two ways. He's got too many one-way players where he's got a Korver, couldn't guard a pile of dust in a corner. You know, then he's got Bogans and Brewer who got the D, but they don't got the offense. And it's hard for him to isolate Rose because at any given moment, there's at least two other guys on the court that the other team doesn't have to guard necessarily. If Noah's not around the basket, the other team is not checking him. You know what I'm saying? If Bogans or Brewer are in the game, they're not getting checked, you know, unless they're cutting to the basket. And then, but he can't take them out and bring in a Korver who's more offensive-minded and who's a better shooter they would have to respect, because then Korver got to play defense on somebody. And he ain't giving them what he's giving them, what he needs to get defensively so that they can maintain who they are, you know, because defense is what has kept them in games and is what's going to keep them in the series, because they're going to have a hard time scoring baskets just because of the makeup of their team. And that's the balance that Thibs has to try and strike, is how do I get enough offense on the court without sacrificing what's going to win us this series, which is our defense. And I think Thibs has done a good job of balancing that. Like I said, I think this is right now it's really close, and I think we're seeing both coaches, both two young coaches. Thibs isn't young in respect to age, but as far as, you know, coaching experience goes as a head coach, you know, he's a young coach. So two young coaches, two guys who are newer to these kind of moments, really kind of coming into their own as coaches with their respective teams. So with that, Mike Miller, that boy, man, I thought he was dead.
I thought he had two broken phones or something.
So we're going to move into the five on the Black Hand side with the Mavs and Thunder series. Now, this series is taking some twists and turns, man. This last game, last night, man, that was a hell of a game. I don't know if you guys got to see it, but that was a hell of a game, man. I was watching it, and I was doing some work at the same time as I was watching it, and I kind of stopped paying attention to it because it was about 3 minutes left, and the Thunder was up by about 10 or 11, so I kind of started focusing more on my work and stopped paying attention because it seemed like it was a wrap. It seemed like the Thunder had the momentum, and, you know, I started talking to the wife, and we was having a conversation, and I turned and looked at the game, and they're going in overtime. And I'm like, what the hell happened? You know what I mean? So we're going to get into our five on the Black Hand side with the Thunder and the Mavs. Here we go. First question. All-time power forward list, where's Dirk at this moment in time on your all-time power forward list? Damn, Mike Miller hit two shots. My bad.
I'll take this one.
I mean, this is a popular question. You know, I've heard a lot of people kind of posing this question and having a discussion around where is Dirk now. You know, if I look at my list of all-time power forwards, you know, I think the list starts with Duncan, Karl Malone. I would even put Barkley on there. I would put Rodman on there, actually. You know, Rodman's not the scorer that these other guys were, but he affected the game arguably maybe even a little bit more than some of the pure scorers like Barkley and Malone did. my dad would be remiss. You know, my dad would be disappointed if I didn't mention Bob Pettit. You know, my dad always said, Bob Pettit averaged 26-16 over his career. You know, what you got to say to that?
Yeah.
You know, and then I would bring in Dirk. I would bring in Dirk after those five or six guys. You know, I would put him ahead of the Elvin Hayes. I would put him ahead of, you know, some of the other guys we've seen. Right on the level of probably a KG. You know, but at this point, I think KG might go a little bit higher because KG has a ring and Dirk doesn't. But to answer your question directly, I would put him in the top 10, probably in that 5-6 area right now. If he wins a ring, if he keeps playing the way he's playing this postseason, I would put him probably in the top 5, top 4 or 5.
So you saying you would put Dirk over KG? KG in his prime, KG? You would put Dirk over KG in his prime?
I would put him on the same level.
Okay.
You know, if I had to rate him out of 100, you know, I would have one at 90 and one at 90.5. and I think the difference right now is the ring. You know, I mean, that's the way we judge our athletes is, okay, you got a group of great players that did great statistical things. They were dominating. But why isn't Dan Marino better than Joe Montana?
Right.
Because he doesn't have a ring.
Right.
Why
when you get to the top, that's what it is. You're splitting hairs, but it is what it is. That's how you got to decide. Everybody's great. When you get up that high and you're talking about guys in that who can be in that conversation, they all had great careers. They all put up numbers. But what's the deciding factor? Ring. So I get you.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you look at Scottie Pippen and Charles Barkley. You know, I think that's a close comparison, like the Dirk and KG. But in a lot of people's mind, you look at Pippen, and some people may say, well, he doesn't get any rings if Jordan's not playing with him. Well, other people say, well, Jordan may not have got as many rings without Scottie Pippen. And so I think because of that, and then you got Chuck, who probably had better, you know, I mean, he was a different type of player, but I think people will look at Scottie Pippen a little bit higher because Pippen was a winner versus Chuck didn't wear any rings.
Hey, I can't argue with that. Devon, where do you put him on your list? Devon?
Sorry about that. I was talking. I had it on mute. I'm not going to go back to Bob Pettit on my list, even though Bob was great. I might start from the 80s on. I don't know if I got Mikhail. I got Duncan.
Hold on 1 second before you get into it. We got a caller on the line. I want to get the caller in real quick so they can join in the conversation. Caller. We got a caller there?
How are you going to put Dirk ahead of Elvin Hayes?
Oh, we got Ray in the house.
I was going to just lurch in the side for a bit until I heard Dirk ahead of Elvin Hayes. I'm like, I got to push this button. let me push this button.
We're about to get a lesson real quick.
No, it ain't a lesson. It just, you know, I love the question because, you know, where do you rate Dirk as a power forward? And I just don't, you know, he's a fluke. He's a freak of nature. You know, he's like Rodman. He's like Rodman in a way, you know. But Rodman was a true power forward. You know, you didn't ask much. Get the garbage and get those rebounds. Play great defense, you know. Dirk is a fluke of nature. You know, I think you kind of compare him with Kevin McHale. You know, it's just hard to put him in a category and say this is what you are. He's just a 6'10" small forward, you know, a damn near 7 foot. So you have to play him. You have to give him a label, but he's just a fluke, and that's what makes him effective. That's what makes him, you know, he's a hard guard. You know, he's a pure shooter, and he's just a hard guard. So when you get him out there, you know, on the floor, he's just different. You know, he's that striped horse. You know, you don't know what to do with him.
Hey, we got extravaganza going on right now. We got another call on the line. Who we got on the line? Yo, what up? This is Phil. Hey. Hey, hello?
Yeah, we on.
Yeah, y'all watching the Bulls game right now?
Yeah, we watching the Bulls game too.
Yo, what'd you think about that goaltend? It was
after.
Did you
call it a goaltend?
Well, it wasn't a goaltend, but you see that? You see his hops, man? Oh, man. Who do you think's going to win? Yo, real quick. I got to go. Who do you think's going to win?
Chicago.
All right, we'll see. If the Heat win, you'll be like, man, Phil told me the Heat are going to win. All right, man, I'm out, though. See you.
This is what we're talking about. It's time to voting at y'all.
Yeah, we got extravaganza going on right now, man.
It's like three-pointers. That's
yeah,
three-pointers.
I like that question, though. That's a good question.
Yeah, once you got a moment, Ray, why don't you hang on for the next one? We'll get you to weigh in on the next one. The next one, are the Thunder going to lose? Are they going to lose? Or are they losing this series because Westbrook is not a true point?
I'm a defend, and I'm not going to blame on Westbrook. Durant has to go to the weight room.
Don't be getting no Pumpkin Jack. You can't get mad at Pumpkin Jack.
So much has been going on with Westbrook. But part of it is, if you watch Durant doesn't present himself. If you watch those last few possessions, the one where he got his shot blocked, he doesn't. You could tell. You got to get to the weight room, big fella. You can't just live being 172 pounds and 16. you went Oklahoma City. Go get some ribs. Go get some down home food. That's your regimen. You got to present yourself. When he's like to try to present himself in the post, he doesn't. He's not strong with it. He's it makes it very difficult even for a Westbrook who is learning to play point guard. And so I think that's part of the problem for them is that I finally started watching it and I'm like, you know, Durant, you're getting a pass. And no one is really being critical of you because you just come weak to the ball. And so, you know, there's some good defenders on him, but he's just coming weak to the ball. He's not playing strong. And you can tell he's about a year or two away from, you know, if he got about 10 or 15 good pounds on him, he's going to be a beast. When he can get down to that post and just lock you and get you behind him, he's going to be a beast. But he's got to do a better job. He's got to play stronger with the ball. There's just certain things I watched last night that said, you make it very difficult, unless you're a seasoned point guard, to get him the ball in the right place because he gets pushed off his spot too easily. By good defenders, so that's all I got to say. But they out of it. They done. If you want to know that, it's over.
It was a wrap for OKC, but it's not Russie's fault.
It's not. I mean, he got some stuff he needs to work on, but if Durant plays stronger, the offense I think would run much smoother. I mean, I think not enough people are talking about the way in which Durant is not physically ready for some of the challenges he's facing in this round. I haven't heard enough about that from people.
But it might not all be physical. It might be mental as well. You know, you go back to, you know, go back to this series with Chicago and what Rose is doing and how he's playing, and watch what, you know, especially that game last night with Durant. you know, these are telling times for their careers, not just for these series, not just for today, but how well they come back now. Because I think they're done as well. I think that that loss last night crushed them. So I think that, that you know, they're pretty much out of it. But we'll see how this, you know, how this plays out, you know, next year and the year after. You know, what's happening to Durant and to Rose, you know, happened to Jordan early in his career. You know, those series with Boston, you know, they were the turning point in his career, really. I mean, he could have just went on and just been a pure scorer and just, but all of a sudden, the need to win, you know, the need to win overwhelmed him. And then he just, his, you know, the championships just started rolling. And I'm anxious to see how this, you know, I have an idea that, you know, Chicago may be pretty much done. And we'll see how Rose reacts. And like you said, when he gets that other player, that next player, that takes some of the pressure off him, but also gives him an out. You know, when you have to, you know, go up against, you know, a team like Miami, a team like Dallas, you know, these are guys, these two teams, you know, Dallas and Miami, are full of guys that haven't won a damn thing. They're hungry, you know. They are putting Rose and Durant where they were before,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're taking theirs now. Now that Boston is gone, now that L.A. is gone, Dallas and Miami are gone. We can win this. We can win this. Now that these two
like
teams
Mike
are gone.
Say, it's like Mike Epps said, you go out to the bar as a young guy, you go out to the bar and you find that old man who got one more fight in him.
Right.
He's going to give you everything he got. He look at you, I got one more in me. Come on. He wear your ass out.
Exactly. You know,
that's what Dallas
is. Out in the West, you got Jason Kidd just hungry for a championship. You know, you got Dirk just hungry for a championship. And, he, you know, you go out East, you know, LeBron be getting his ass whooped for years. He can't wait to win the championship. He, you know, but wait and see what happens with these other young players. Wait to see what happens to Rose's mentality. Because he could, you know, they could be creating a monster, don't even know it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
He might be set,
great
he may,
point right
he,
there.
He may be sending a
anybody
message.
Else want to weigh in on that one?
You know.
So I'm going to keep it moving. I'm going to go into this next one. And the next question is Perkins' impact overrated? Have people been underrating Perkins so much that now he's overrated? Has he jumped the shark?
The thing about Perkins,
because Haslam is like the new Perkins. Haslam is the new Perkins.
Perkins.
I think Perkins.
Go ahead.
I think Perkins got a lot of credit when he couldn't play in that game 7 last year against the Lakers. And you know, I think it was easy for everyone alike to say, you know what, with all those offensive boards that the Lakers got in that fourth quarter and that second half, that if Perkins was there, he would have made a difference. And that may be the case, but that still doesn't mean that he is a cornerstone of any team. He is a complimentary piece at best.
Sure.
So if you look at even when the Celtics won, he was a guy that gave them good minutes, good solid defense, didn't give them much on the offensive end. You know, honestly, he was somewhat of a liability, you know, not as much as Rondo, but to the same degree where they had floor spacing issues. And honestly, a lot of times in the fourth quarter during that championship year in 08, he was on the bench. They moved Garnett to five and played Posey or Poe at four. So I think, especially when Boston struggled a little bit earlier this year and Perkins was out, I mean, it was almost like his spirit grew a little bit. And Danny Ainge, in my opinion, took full benefit of that. You know, I think it was a bad trade, but he got a lot more back in Jeff Green than he ever really should have with just Perkins. So, yeah, I think Perkins is overstated at this point. And I don't think he's a savior out there in Oklahoma City. But I think he gives them a little bit more of an identity in the post, you know, defensive presence that they didn't have as much out there. But again, I think he is what he is. Like Denny Green says, they are who we thought they were.
Right. And I want to say, add this, that Perkins is playing who he's always told you he is. But he never presented himself as anything other than what he's getting out, other than his injury. I'm gonna play defense. I'm gonna rebound. I'm gonna give you intensity. That's about it. But I'm not gonna be able to give you more. And I always felt like Oklahoma City looked at it and read more into it. And I've never felt like, you know, some players present themselves as more than what they really are. You know, I think about, you know, that game, the Steelers against the Cowboys, when Brown got those interceptions and got the MVP, and he tried to present himself as though he was the next coming of Deion Sanders, and the Raiders bought it, right?
Al Davis.
Very quickly,
Al Davis strikes again.
But in this case, I don't think that's the case. You know, he is what he says he is, what he is. And I think, you know, Oklahoma City, I feel like they thought he was going to be, you know, Elijah. It felt like they thought they were going to get an offensive presence down the post, and he's never been that. You know, and so, and I think he's about a year away from giving them whatever he can give them. I think just with a knee, I think it takes another year before he can even get to the level of being active. But he's still not going. He's going to be a liability offensively, and you got to hope he gives you a presence defensively. So, I felt like they were trying to get more and trying to catch lightning in a bottle, and they got burned. And I think Boston is going to benefit a year from now, because I think that Green will add value, you know, once he gets comfortable with his environment in Boston. So, but Oklahoma City's done.
And my take on the whole Perk situation is, I think Perk, the game had passed Perk by really fast. And you hate to say that for a 26-year-old guy, but when he was in Boston, it was about who had the biggest front line. And, you know, you're going against Boston, you got to get through Orlando, you got to get through the Lakers. It's all about having a stud on your front line who can match up and play one-on-one post D without requiring you to double team. Dallas is not throwing the ball into Tyson Chandler. They're not going to dump it into Brandon Haywood, you know. And so that kind of nullifies his value. That's where his value was at. Mike Miller hit another damn three-pointer. That was where Perk's value was at, was in being able to man up on the other team's best low post threat. Well, Dallas isn't a low post team, and their best low post threat is Dirk, and there's no way any coach in their right mind is putting Perk on Dirk. It's just not going to happen. And so I think this is one of those series where he gets exposed for, yes, he's an impact player. Yes, he can be an impact defensive player. But his impact is limited to certain circumstances. You know what I mean?
And that's,
like,
and that's exactly it. You know, last year in that game seven, what they missed, what Boston missed, was that defense in front of the rim. When LA could come right down the middle of the court, you know, right through the middle of the lane and score, that's where Perkins, if he does nothing else, he makes sure that you are that team that you can't do that to.
Right.
You know?
And when the possession's over, when you miss a shot, possession over.
Yep.
When Perk is in there, you know what I mean? He's going to block out. He's going to keep there. He may not get the rebound, but he's going to keep his guy from getting it.
Yeah, you're not going to go straight up the lane. That's what he does. And he doesn't sell himself as anything but. He's not a premier player. You know, and he's not going to. If Dallas, you know, bought into that, thinking that, you know, he's up and coming, it's not going to happen. It never will. He won't establish himself as anything more. You know, and that's.
What I want to add on, I think you hit it right on the head, because Dallas, I mean, Oklahoma City did this with the idea they knew they were going to see the Lakers.
Right.
And
And so, Marcus, your assessment, you know, if they knew they were going to see Dallas, then I don't think they would have made the trade. Because Green in some ways helps them better against Dallas than Perk. But I think they just knew it was going to be them against the Lakers. And for that reason, Perk would have, he would look a much better deal now if they played the Lakers. You're right on. I do want to say, don't Perk look like a young chief, though? They're going to look on the bench.
Just got a permanent scowl. Permanent frown.
If you knew half of the nation,
hey, he sounds like so
you
when he talks.
Permanent scowl, too. He know they're on Blog Talk Radio talking about you, you know?
So here's the next question. So the next question, and this is the last comment you made, Devon, leads right into it. Everybody, when the season started, was positioning themselves to go against the Lakers, the Celtics, the Heat, the Magic. And I think that may have given Dallas an advantage. So the question is, are the Mavs a favorite to win it all right now? Would you favor them to win it all? And the Heat or the Bulls, would you favor the Mavs to win it all? And I would say I would, because – Nobody set their roster to face this Mavericks team. You know what I'm saying? Like, when people were making off-season moves, they weren't making moves in mind. How am I going to stop Dirk? Nobody was thinking about that. They kind of wrote this team off. Nobody expected this team to be here at this point in the season.
I would say that I would make them the favorites. And I think that, you know, people who are watching the Heat play against Chicago now, the Mavericks going to have something for the Heat. And that's the other thing, what they do, and this is what you saw beginning in the Lakers series. They make your big men a liability. And so even though the Heat now have Haslam, Haslam can't guard Dirk, right? And so Dirk creates problems defensively in a way that just hurts you. And so the way they space the floor, and then how they're playing defense, mixing the zone with the man-to-man, I think they'll be able to do some things with the Heat. If the Heat come out in Chicago, I think they've seen that movie before. And so, you know, they'll be able to match the intensity. A lot of it has to do with Chandler. I mean, I think Chandler's given a kind of anchor in the middle. And one thing Chandler said that was an interesting thing they said about him is that, you know, when they had a chance to play with the U.S. team last year, you know, he was with Billups and Lamar Odom. And what they realized, they talked about this, that these guys don't take practices off. And he brought that culture to Dallas in terms of, you know, really getting after it in practice. And you see in the play, we look at Dirk looked like, he's thinking about all those weeks he walked. I think when he walked in the bush and was in New Zealand or Australia when they lost that series. I mean, he just looked like he's got a different set of spirit going through him. Like, this is happening. And I don't know if anybody else can match up against him. So, yeah, I don't think teams prepare for this because it's a highly skilled team. It's deep. And they got Butler coming back next year. I mean, they could, you know, if they do bring him back – I mean, they could be a deep team next year. So I got Dallas as a favorite. And Carlisle, you know, is doing a hell of a coaching job. He's long overdue. I mean, you know, he's gotten snubbed in a couple of different places, and I'm happy to see that he's had a success with Dallas.
FPLT, where you at, man? What's your take? I know you're riding with the Heat.
I am, but – everything's true what everybody just said about the Mavericks. The one thing that really makes me nervous about them is that they're an outside shooting team. And shooters can get cold, they can get hot. But most times they don't stay real consistent. So right now they're at their strengths because of what Jason Terry's bringing to the table. What Stojakovic is bringing off the bench, what Barea is bringing, Jason's kid, his outside shooting is it's been out of this world this playoffs, you know. But I don't know if you can plan on that and hope for that to happen on the biggest stage. I think what you're getting from Dirk, you can count on to a certain degree. I think what you're getting defensively, you can count on. But the outside shooting, you know, if they're not shooting well, if they're not shooting 40% from the three-point line, I mean, they're a very average team. And against the Heat, you get those long rebounds, man, they off and running. And that pays, and that plays to their strengths. You know, same thing with Chicago, if Chicago happens to see Dallas. So I'm still not sold on them. I'm sold on them a lot more than I was in the past because I think Tyson Chandler brings a lot to the table. You know, Marcus and I, you know, we talk quite a bit about just about every guy who played for Team USA this past summer had either as good a year that they've ever had or a career year. And Tyson Chandler is probably the poster child for that. He really resurrected his career, and he's given them a whole different look. So I'm not sold on the Mavericks. Quite honestly, I think whoever comes out the East will win it. I mean, that includes Chicago as well. So that's my take on it.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you a quick question. I mean, we're looking at Dirk. You don't you see Dirk settling for fewer jump shots in the fourth? So you said about the post presence. Since I see him in the paint more down the stretch, as someone who shoots 90% shooting in a way that you didn't see him earlier in his career. I mean, don't you see him in the paint going to the bucket more in the fourth than you have in years past to negate the outside shooting that they used to do a lot down the stretch?
Yeah, I agree with that. Absolutely. Absolutely. But I think they're also apt to do a lot of the two-man game with him and Terry down the stretch. And a lot of that's going to happen, like, a lot of that's going to weigh in the balance on how well they're shooting from the outside. But I agree. I think the reason that the Mavs have gotten this far in the playoffs is because Dirk is being a lot more aggressive. I mean, he's not dependent on that off-balance, awkward, unorthodox fadeaway shot that he makes so famous. I mean, he's getting down and dirty in there. But still, my fear is if they have a cold shooting night, they won't get to the point where they're close in the fourth quarter. They'll be down 10 or 15 points.
All good points. Ray, you got something you want to throw in there?
Well, the only thing that we haven't touched on is the age of Dallas. And I think that should Miami and Dallas meet, you know, in a seven-game series, after all that's already happened, you know, I think that age does become a factor. And let's face it, Dallas's main strength and their biggest weapons are some old dudes. So, you know, again, it comes down to who really wants it more. Right now, the way that the Mavericks are playing, you know, they – you know, this whole playoffs has been just a shock to me, the way that they've just shown that desire to win. They want to be champions. You know, the Miami seems to be anointed. You know, they got together to do this. This is, you know, their destiny. They decided they were going to do this, and they've faltered at times. Dallas has just been on a mission. They seem at home. They seem unstoppable. You know, coming back from, you know, the deficit they came back from last night, you know, all of these things are going to play into it. But I think at the, you know, what hasn't been said is how this team, this Dallas team, is going to play a seven-game series against these young, you know, Miami team. After what Bosch did the other night, you know, you really have to look at Miami three deep. And, you know, my take on it is that I think Miami can beat them. I think that Miami, as Phil said, if that shooting goes cold one night, if just a shadow of doubt gets into Dallas's head, I think that this Miami team can run them off the court. And that's just what I think. If this magic, you know, seems to, you know, fade on this Dallas team, I think that they're vulnerable. Because they're going to be tired. They're going to be tired from this whole playoff that they've been involved in. As good as they've been playing.
Well said. Well said. So thinking about the A's, we got another question about one of the Mavericks and where they rank all time. And the question is Jason Kidd. I was trying to explain to my daughter. Jason Kidd was a walking triple-double for about 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, and kids nowadays see him, and they don't quite understand what he was. You know, so I want to kind of bring it into perspective for the listeners out there and have you guys talk about where does Jason Kidd rank in respect to some of the all-time great point guards? Where would you put Kidd on your all-time point guard list?
Well, for me.
Well, I'll start with that one. Go ahead, Phil.
No, go ahead, Ray, man.
Well, the thing that I always remember about Jason Kidd, first and foremost, is the damn rebounds that man gets. You know?
Yeah.
And everybody else, you know, he's going into the land of the Giants, and he's getting his every night. And, you know, those are the things that you don't remember about point guards. You know, assists, steals, points. Yes, that's what point guards are supposed to do. But this guy goes in and gets his boards. He does what your coach always told you to do. Follow that shot, you know. And it just, you know, that's what these young kids don't realize is that, you know, he's snatching rebounds like a forward at point. And you know, I'll take it, you know, to a whole different level. I always wanted Jason Kidd on my fantasy team because I knew I could get a 3-point shooting center. I could get a 3-point shooting center and make up because you're not going to out rebound a team when you have a Jason Kidd there. I mean, it's just he just goes in, and that's the grab the lunch pail go to work style basketball, and that don't seem to be, you know, too relevant anymore. People don't want to go in there and do the dirty work, but Jason Kidd made a living off of it.
I would put Jason Kidd, you know, if we're looking 80s on, the guys I would put ahead of him would be Isaiah Thomas. I put Magic ahead of him. I think based on what Nash has done the last couple of years, the last 5 or 6 years of his career, you know, I think you have to put him in front with the MVPs and, I mean, just the way that he dominated the last 2 years. And just a side note, I think it's Magic and Oscar Robertson. I think those are the two top point guards ever, in my opinion. And then, you know, I would put Stockton in there as well in that list. And then I would bring in Jason Kidd. You know, I think based on his body of work, he's ahead of all the guys that we have right now playing point guard in the league. That doesn't mean that he'll stay ahead of them, but, you know, so I would put him clearly in the top 10 of all time. And in present day, I would put him more probably 4th, 5th, 6th, somewhere in that range.
My bad, man. LeBron just got a charge. Watch the game, man. It's 8 seconds left. They tied up, man.
Man, I would love to see Chicago pull this out. I still don't like the Heat.
Hey, we're going to take a break from our regularly scheduled program. We're going to watch these last 8. We're going to talk about these last 8 seconds right now. We're going to get into these last. Everybody got the game on?
Yeah. No, fellas, I got to go. I just popped in for a minute. I got to let you go.
All right, then, Ray.
All right. You guys take care. I'll
yeah,
I'll
you too, man. Good rapping with you.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Now, I feel you on the kid points, Phil. Like, I think he's definitely a locked top 5 point guard, in my opinion. A locked top 5 point guard. And Ray's points on him being able to take a rebound, get the rebound and start the break on his own. You know, a lot of guards, big man gets the rebound, he's got to locate the guard. Kid would get, one of Kid's greatest advantages was he would get it and just go. And that's what made New Jersey so tough when he was playing there, is that they played at such a quick pace that a lot of teams couldn't match it. And when you had when your power forward was a young, spry Kenyon Martin, who was flying up and down the court, you know, when he was able to do that, that gave you even more of an advantage. When you got your power forward who can, you know, sprint like a two guard, that creates a level of speed that they had with Richard Jefferson, Kidd, and Kenyon Martin. That was just it was hard for teams to match. Come on, Rose, ice this, ice him, OT baby.
You got that delayed television. I forgot. He was already walking back to the bench when
Yeah.
You up there talking ice him. I'm like, I didn't want to ruin it for you.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you guys this about Jason Kidd. You know, gosh, what was it, 4 or 5 years ago when Kobe really wanted to get Jason Kidd, but the Laker management did not want to give up Bynum?
Mm-hmm.
The first question is, had the Lakers got Kidd for Bynum, do you think the Lakers still would have won a championship? The second question is, where do you think the Lakers would be now had they had Kidd?
See, if they had given up Bynum to get Kidd, I don't know if they would ever have gotten Gasol. And I think Gasol, as soft as he was this year, and as soft as he's been in the years past, those two championship years, I think he was a huge difference. Because and I tell people this all the time, anytime they bring up trading Bynum or trading Gasol from the Lakers, and actually when I do my Armchair GM blog, check it out, you know, Return of the G, Armchair GM blog, the Chronicles of an Armchair GM, it's going to be up on Facebook and on RealSportsGuys.com. A new blog coming out. I actually do have the Lakers trading Gasol. But the reason I told people not, even when they were talking Carmelo, is what made the Lakers special is that they can go 7-1, 7-1, 6-10 across their front line and not really lose anything skill-wise and defensively. And that's what made them special. And so I think they still could have won two titles with Kidd. They would have had to find. They would have to figure out a way to make that team with Kobe Kidd. I think what you have is you have two perimeter creators, and so I think what you would have to do with that team is surround it with finishers, whether it's 3-point shooters or guys who can finish at the rim. You'd have to surround those two guys with finishers to make that team special. You know what I mean? Like the Bulls, this version of the Bulls, they're a special defensive team. The Heat are special because they have 2.75 amazing talent. and, you know, I think what makes Dallas special is that combination of length and skill that they can put out on the floor with, you know, Dirk and Chandler and Kidd and then Marion and all the guys that they can bring out there and Stojakovic, who are 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", but all are very skilled. So I think they definitely could have won, and they definitely may have won the title. But I think the team would have looked very different. It probably would have been a more perimeter-oriented team, which may or may not have increased, which probably would decrease their chances of winning the title, but I still think they would have pulled one out. Unless Tony Braxton came along, and then they started arguing over Tony Braxton.
They definitely would have been able to defend the point guard position. I can say that. But I will say this, because I didn't get a chance to chime in on the Kidd where you rank. All I got to say is he took New Jersey to the finals twice. That right there should tell people a lot. A franchise that was nothing, hadn't been anything since the ABA days. And he took them to it twice. I think he's the most underrated point guard sometimes in history because, like you said, he was a walking triple-double. And I think sometimes he did things so easy that he always didn't get the love he should have gotten for MVP
He was doing it when he always didn't have a lot of folks around him all the time. I think Phil hit it right on the head in terms of just, you know, if you're looking at the 80s on, where you might put him all time. If you just talk about rebounding guards, he's got to be in the top two or three.
He's not the best, he's second best.
Second best. And anytime you can be a top in a category, you got to be somewhere. If I'm looking at Nash, am I saying he's a top one or two in any category? Nah. I mean,
maybe court vision. Maybe court vision.
Maybe court vision, but is he better than Cousy? Is he better than Zeke? Is he better than, we could go through a lot of guards probably who got just great. Is he better than Stockton? Is he better than Magic with court vision?
Not necessarily.
I mean, you might say range, but Zeke had range. I mean, you can go through the list. And so, and I'm not saying that. I mean, I think I like Nash a lot. I think those years he got to, the years he got the MVP, I always felt like the NBA was down.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Those weren't the glory years of the NBA. I was like, the NBA was in that transition period.
It was. It was definitely in the transition period. The guys who were supposed to be winning MVPs at that point were not. Had all taken a step back. The T-Max, the Vince Carters, all those guys who were supposed to be in their primes at that point had all of their primes interrupted. You know, all of those guys, KG was marred was stuck in Minnesota. You know, all of those guys who were supposed to be the dudes to carry that torch through that era, all hit hiccups, all had career hiccups.
And you know, Malone and folks like that just dropped off. I mean, we were in that transit period, and you didn't have the new guard kind of coming up. And so I always felt like he benefited from that along with style play. He's a great player, but I just think that era was that way. And Kidd was still steady through all that.
Yeah, and this is Renegade Radio, so I'm gonna keep all the way real. He also benefited from the league moving towards trying to clean up his image. Because the 90s wasn't the best era for the league, as far image wise. You know, yeah, you know, it was just too much hip hop. It was too much Wu Tang, and they wanted more MC Hammer.
It started the dress code, the whole thing. And the funny thing, the worst dresser out of anybody was Stockton. I'm wearing a T-shirt and blue jeans. You know, but Karl Malone be wearing, you know, he's wearing like the farmer's gear.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you're right. I think he was. I'm not saying that he wasn't a great player, but I think he benefited from a number of things that were circumstantial that elevated him in a lot of different ways. So
yeah,
including being with a coach who created a style of play. I think that worked really well for him. Whereas someone like Kidd, you can put him in any style, he's gonna do what he do.
Yeah, I like in those years with for Nash to Kurt Warner in St. Louis,
yeah,
where you had the perfect guy for your system.
Yeah.
You know, you had the guy who your system was made for, and I think that's what we saw with Nash and Phoenix.
And I think sometimes Kidd and Nash get in that same – where I think Kidd, you got to have that conversation above that. I mean, I think if Kidd had won one of those championships, we wouldn't be having this conversation. But the fact that he took New Jersey to two finals, and you really thought about that team, I mean, you think you look at that team, you're like, he has some good pieces, but he willed them to a final, you know, in a way. And that was before he really had a good jump shot. So he was doing it, and he really could hit a J. So
yeah, I mean, he was dominating games without scoring. I mean, he was, I mean, in the same way Rodman and Ben Wallace could have major impact on a game without scoring, Kidd was that way.
I mean, Doc is hoping Rondo can become Kid in that way. I mean, Rondo's almost there, but the way that he controlled and dominated, Rondo doesn't quite dominate a game like Kid dominated the game.
Yeah.
This game is...
Stone cold. That was cold-blooded right there. Oh, man. Ronnie Brewer with the three. Okay. So what I want to do right now is transition. We got about 10 minutes left in the show. And I know, D, you had a really great topic that you want to get on in the segment that we call the B-side, where we take something that's a little off the beaten path. You know, every hot single had that song that was on the damn D-Wade. That was on the B-side that was kind of that underground sleeper cut. And so we got the B-side coming up. And D, why don't you tell people where you want to take them on the B-side?
We all have to be amazed by what happened this past weekend with Bernard Hopkins winning the light heavyweight championship of the world. The idea of him doing his thing at, 46 years old, overtaking George Foreman by becoming, the oldest person to win a legitimate championship. And what it showed me, I'm glad we're talking about Kid, because what it showed me is in all sports, the young folks are forgetting the fundamentals. They're forgetting the history of the sport. They're forgetting the little things that make you great. And that fight proved the same thing that night that, these vets, people like Kid, they're staying in the game because they live and breathe by the things that make you great in the game. And so, I definitely want to – I think it's going to go under the radar because people aren't just paying attention to it. But Bernard Hopkins is a phenomenon. I mean, this cat has been competitive for a long period of time. At 46, I mean, he's older than me, and I couldn't even run a win sprint. So for him to be out there boxing hard for that many rounds, it's amazing.
And Phil, I know
you watched the fight.
Yeah, I watched the fight too.
Oh, you did? Okay.
And it was actually for B Hop, and I think it was Max Kellerman who said it during the telecast, but he was saying that for Hopkins didn't have the speed and the physical gifts that a Roy Jones had. You know, his greatness was made. It wasn't necessarily given, or he wasn't necessarily born with his greatness. And Kellerman made a statement, something to the effect, and I don't remember the exact quote, but it was something to the effect of, made last longer than what's made last longer than what's given. You know, and that's why he can fight till he's 45, 46 years old, because he's invested in learning the craft. And that's why you got, again, Grant Hill, Jason Kidd, guys like that. Paul Pierce, I think, is going to be a guy who is one of those guys who has a game. Even Dirk, the things that he's done are unique to Dirk, but they're still fundamentally sound in that he works those things, and they're not dependent upon athleticism. They're dependent upon perfecting certain skills and really putting in the time into that craftsmanship of what you do on the court. Whatever it is you do, you focus on it, and you take it as it's a craft, and you try to perfect it. And I think that's what B. Hop has done, is that, his defense is impeccable. But in this fight against Pascal, he kind of went out of character a little bit and boxed him. I mean, and went slugger and slugged and got to slugging with him. And Pascal wasn't prepared for it because, Lord have mercy, it's not B-Hop's character. Dang just threw the ball away. It's a wrap for the Bulls, man. That was some old Denver Nugget stuff right there. I'm mad, man.
Yeah, I'll jump in on the B-Hop conversation. You guys really hit everything on the head. One thing that we didn't discuss yet is, B-Hop's
you know, I mean, he's an elder statesman now, and he still understands the old school philosophy of boxing of kind of hyping yourself to selling yourself to being more of a showman. And, you know, he had the whole thing going with the executioner ski mask, you know, to the pre-fight rumble he had with Pascal, the news conference. You know, he gets that. And to your point, Marcus, I think he was trying to be a little more exciting, trying to play a little bit more to the crowd, and he did fight. He did box a little bit more. I mean, he was still real technically sound, man. I mean, that's been his calling card throughout his whole career. And I agree, he's really developed that, but I was surprised. I mean, he went after Pascal on a few occasions, which in the past, you know, even when he beat Trinidad, when he beat Tito, you know, I mean, he didn't really box him too much. So, I mean, it was nice to see, man. You know, I was watching, I was just cracking up because, you know, I mean, B-Hop just running around before the fight, man, talking trash. You know, he weighed in 4 ounces over. B-Hop said, you know what, I can piss 4 ounces, man. That ain't no big deal. So, I mean, I enjoyed it, man, because so much of boxing has changed. And, you know, and honestly, I'm just starting to learn about boxing. That's not a sport that I really grew up with. But over the last 10 years, I really, you know, I've been hanging around friends that know the sweet science a lot better than me, man. And so, I mean, it's kind of nice to see a boxer that's still, you know, out there running his mouth and trying to back it up.
He pulled out all the stops, the elbows, flinching, like when they were pulling him away. He was acting like he was being held, but he was holding for the whole.
Just cagey. Cagey vet moves out there.
And Pascal didn't have anything to do with it. And the jab, the art of using the jab. Now, when he fight Dawson, because Dawson is with Emmanuel Stewart, that's going to be a hell of a fight.
Yeah.
That's going to be a hell of a fight when they but you saw that, you know, just knowing the fight. And like he said to you, he said, you know, as long as a young man, as long as John stays true, he's going to be able to recover from it. Because he was there before. He lost to Roy Jones and had to battle all the way back. And it's the fundamentals, the thing he talks about. And you see across a lot of these sports that these young cats are not getting. That's why Jason Kidd can get away with it with a Westbrook. Because they ain't really looking at that fun. He got them old school vet moves. He got the little subtly going. He's sticking to the fundamental stuff. He worked it from the neck up. And you saw that same thing. I was telling Marcus earlier, you see that same thing happening. Saw that same thing happening in the boxing match. I just said, man, I can't believe what I'm watching. He lured him into the deep water. He lured him into the deep water.
Yeah, we got about a minute left. We kicked the outro. So, yeah, man, props to Bernard Hopkins for holding it down. Looks like the Bulls take a L on this one. It's been a great show, as always. So we're going to pat ourselves on the back real quick. It's been a great show. LeBron killing, doing his thing. I ain't mad at him. The Bulls gave it to him. Party shots, folks. Get him in while you can.
Larry Randall, I need to hear from you next week, man. You had some good points last week, but we've been seeing LeBron hit the outside shot. And it's 3-1, baby. I need to hear from you.
That's what you call a call out. Textbook, baby.
I don't know what we need to say anymore.
Real Sports Guys, RSG Renegade Radio. Holla at us. Tuesday nights, 8:30, 10:30. Blog Talk Radio. Get on.
All right, we out, fellas.
That was a good show, man.
Yeah, that was a good. That was a real good show.
Yeah, we have to stick with those format. That format's good.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Bill T done called him out.
Larry got the call back.
We're gonna have to keep it going. Hey Phil, you should blog about it, man.
You need to go ahead and blog about it.
You should blog about it. Hey, I got a good one. This Lakers blog is gonna be hot when I get it up. I'm gonna try to get it up to tomorrow evening. So I'm gonna get it up, I'm gonna tag a bunch of people in it. And then I'm gonna start working on the one for the Celtics. I'm gonna put the Laker one out in two parts. But I just got some theories on some things that they can do to improve their team.
Hey, y'all, just see after Dwayne Wade blocked that shot, they showed Pat Riley in the stands and he was just shaking his head in disbelief.
Yeah.
So he was shaking his head thinking, man, if I ever had a chance to coach these cats. talking about you drawing up plays.
Right.
Giving it to script. Okay. All right. Okay.
He said, hey, give me that napkin, baby. I got to play for Spo.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, fellas, I got to get going. I tried to do the PayPal thing early, and I was having some problems with my card. So I'm going to do it tomorrow morning, get the PayPal in. So that's all taken care of. And then, you know, we'll do it again next week. I'll come up with another rundown. And we'll just keep it going, man.
I love this format. I'm gonna have to. Hey, y'all forcing me on my game now. Y'all like tightened up the play. We're playing like Loyola Marymount for now. Now y'all coming out with stats like Van Gundy.
Yeah. We gotta. You know, I had to get the playbook. I had to get the playbook out.
I feel like I gotta go to practice now.
We're talking about practice. Yeah, and see, that's the thing. I ain't even going to my bag of sound clips like I can now. I got some stuff up on the page now. We got a little menu. You know, I got the practice. I got AI's practice on there. I got some Bart Scott. I got some AI. I got some Randy Moss. Yeah, I got that Can't Wait. You know what I'm saying? I got a little bit of somebody, everybody. I got some Charlie Sheen.
Oh no!
I got some clips from The Hangover.
Oh no!
So yeah, we didn't even get a chance to incorporate those in there. I was trying to wait till there were appropriate times to play them and everything. And that's what I'm gonna try to do is find, you know, appropriate spots to plug them in. I just want to be doing it for the sake of doing it, but we got some things going on, man. You know,
a Mike Miller sighting.
Seriously, man. Dude showed up. Yeah, he took James Jones' spot. You know, one of those cats was gonna have one of these games at home, and I knew that. It's always Taj Gibson had the best game of his life that first game.
Yeah.
And guys who are role players do that at home. Role players play well at home. You ain't seen Taj Gibson since. After that first game, Taj Gibson probably made himself about $3 million, but then these last three games, he's lost it.
Lost it all. Grand opening, grand closing.
For real. Oh, man. Well, I'm gonna hit y'all up. I'm gonna hit the page with the blog, and I'll get at y'all with the next rundown sometime either Sunday night or early next week.
Okay.
So that y'all can get prepped.
Okay.
All right, then, fellas.
Take care. All right. Y'all take it easy.
Yeah, peace.
All right.